This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report. It is the 31st day of August 2015. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jerry Gulkey. He's at the Gulkey Group out of Chicago, Illinois. Jerry joined me earlier today as I'm now off to the Farm Progress Show in hopes of getting things set up for live shows tomorrow, Wednesday, and Thursday. A bit later in this program today, we'll also talk about the weather forecast. John Davis will be here. He's from Earthrest Technologies out of Chicago, Illinois, and joins us on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Find us online, of course, at WILLAG.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
We don't have any numbers for you this afternoon from the CME Group, as I'm out of the office at this hour over at the Farm Progress Show site, setting up for the live shows Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday in the University of Illinois tent. We'll be live at 10 o'clock on stage, and then again during the closing market report at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. If you have the opportunity to visit with us, please do drop by. The U of I tent is just inside the main gate on West Avenue. You'll turn to the right and go about a block and a half. That's at the corner of West and 3rd Street. So just drop by and see us. Orion Samuelson takes the stage at 10 a.m. in the morning. I'm on in the afternoon at 2 o'clock. We'll have a whole series of folks that are on the Farm Progress Show site with us, including many of our analysts and a whole lot of the guys that you hear from U of I and U of I Extension. Our analyst list for tomorrow includes Wayne Nelson, Steve Freed, Bryce Knorr, Jerry Gulkey, Bill Gentry, and Dale Dirkles. Should be a great program during the day. You can stop by and see them. They'll be there either at 2 or 10 or both, and you'll have the opportunity to listen to them and talk to them because they'll be up on stage, but of course they'll be out in the audience, and you'll get that chance if you have some questions to talk with them. Bryce Knorr, in fact, in the morning will be there at 10 o'clock, and he will announce the survey results for farm futures and what the expectations for planting intentions might be next week, at least this early stage in the game, that there at the Farm Progress Show in Decatur.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at agrigold.com.
Well, here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area this evening. Partly cloudy and a low of 67. We'll have a south wind tonight at about 5 miles an hour, and then tomorrow, isolated showers, a few thunderstorms, mostly sunny, a high of 89 degrees, south-southwest winds at 6 to 8. Chance of rainfall just 20% tomorrow. So do come on out to the Farm Progress Show in Decatur. Should be a really good day, if a bit of a warm one. There's plenty of water on the site and all kinds of drinks. Make sure that you have yourself really well hydrated through the day if you're at the Farm Progress Show site tomorrow. And then tomorrow night in the Urbana-Champaign area, partly cloudy, a low of 67 with a south-southwest wind at about 6 miles an hour. And on Wednesday, again, sunny skies, a high of 90 degrees. Wednesday night, mostly clear, and 68, and Thursday sunny with a high of 90. Thursday night, partly cloudy, a low of 68 degrees. Friday, sunny skies and 90. Friday night, partly cloudy and 68. Saturday, sunny and 90. Saturday night, 68 degrees under partly cloudy skies, and Sunday, mostly sunny with a high near 90 degrees. Now, I've already told you who will be there on Tuesday at the Farm Progress Show, but we have great lineups for Wednesday and Thursday as well. Among the folks that will be up on stage with us at 10 o'clock in the morning again, Orion Samuelson will host that program, and then 2 o'clock in the afternoon, live to the Closing Market Report, I'll be hosting Jackie Vakes, Brian Stark, Alan Brugler, Bill Mayer, Ellen Dearden, and Chip Nellinger will be there on Wednesday. And then on Thursday, Mike Zuzlow, Jerry Goodell, Greg Johnson, Merrill Crowley, Matt Bennett, and Jim Angel will be on stage helping us out throughout the Farm Progress Show.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
The closing market report is underwritten in part by Stuart Peterson. Our thanks to them and our many agricultural business underwriters. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason, out of the office this afternoon, setting up at the Farm Progress Show. I hope that you'll come and visit us at the U of I tent tomorrow, Wednesday or Thursday. We're just inside the main gate and about a block to the right as you walk in. It doesn't take very long to get to us. We're at the corner of 3rd Street and West Avenue. We're actually on West Avenue. Be really simple to get there. Tomorrow morning, in fact, Orion Samuelson will take the stage at 10 o'clock. And one of his guests will be Jerry Gulkey of the Gulkey Group. Fortunately for me, Jerry has decided to join us today. I recorded this a bit earlier in the day so that I could go set up at the Farm Progress Show to talk a bit about the marketplace. He just finished up writing his columns for DTN. And he says that he's taking a look at some of the end-of-the-month fundamentals and how to consider those. Thanks, Jerry, for being with us. I do appreciate it. What did you write about for your column today?
Well, I talked about the end of the month, and of course, I look at, you know, our risk management, or I mean our price discovery system in Chicago, per se, or the futures system, as, you know, a daily idea as to your opinion, my opinion, everybody else's opinion, globally, as to how we view the fundamental situation, and of course, the technical, not just being charts, but outside markets, the dollar, China, you name it, all those technical things that take an effect. And then we vote at 115 or whenever, 120, I guess now. And that tells us the winners and losers. But there's a lot of intermarket spreading that goes on, a lot of money being floated around by people half our age, which means they're probably still above 30, but still under 40. And they do a lot of algorithm trading, a lot of money moving from one thing to another. So usually weekly kind of takes out the fluff. You kind of look at it from a week-to-week basis and say, okay, how'd we do? But monthly is important to me because it takes into consideration the at least one USDA report. And if it happens to fall on, you know, like September 30th or June 30th, you also have a stocks report, which can move markets at the end of the month. So we take a look at basically at the end of the month, three USDA reports, a lot of weather, a lot of innuendo, a lot of accusations, and then, of course, 90 days worth of trading that says, how are we doing? And anytime we close below the previous month's low, I get a little nervous because that says the market digested something. And it says, you know, if it closed below the previous month's low, it says, well, after considering everything that I've heard and the weather that happens to be during the summer, I'm still negative or I'm still positive. And of course, if it closed above the previous month's high, it says, it's not done yet. We've got more to go. And this month has shown some developments that are not too good. Soybeans, of course, everybody's talked about, but you know, we're at the lowest level in 5 or 6 years at least, and that's not good for soybeans. Soybean oil is at a 7-year low, I think, at least 7 years, in spite of the idea behind us that we're going to have more biodiesel usage. The government kind of suggested that, and soybean meal is going to close below the previous month's low, kind of like corn, and still suggest that there's probably pretty good demand out there. But it's the soybeans I have the most concern about. And wheat, of course, we've been sitting here, if you look at a chart, there's some long-term support at 450, which makes you wonder if we close below 450 in the further months in September or beyond, what's left below but air. So all that points to a situation that is does not look good for agriculture. Or we're at a bottom down here where we've given an awful good chance for the end user to buy a lot of grain at a cheap price. And but way it looks now, with it, you know, this week opening lower again, we need something to come in here to support these grains. Otherwise, I recall, you know, 2008 when it took 16 months, basically 14 to 16 months to get us back above a decent level, and then it took a drought, not a demand shock, but a supply shock where we reduced supply in order to get the price high enough to induce global supply. You know, now we have competitors. I also recall back in 1985, the last ag recession we had, that it took me 20 years before I had land prices where it was above where I purchased it. I purchased some of that $3,000 an acre land. It took a long time. It was a Talk about a sideways market. And finally, when it blew out to the upside, it was a demand, artificially, I guess you'd call it, demand-induced government pseudo-energy policy that bought us another 5 million bushels of corn demand. And now I look back at it and say we've got, you know, a lot of acres worldwide, and we've got a little bit too much with the chance of growing more if the USDA is right than what Full Farmer thinks. And here we said, are we engaged in another period of time where it's just going to take me 10 or 15 years to get us back up to where we like $6 corn again. So that's kind of it in a nutshell. Price flexibility, marketing flexibility, I mean, and management and marketing especially is important. So, you know, you could sell the farm here and give up a chance at $5 corn next year if we have a crop problem, or you could be looking at this thing as being a long drawn out affair that puts to use your intuition and your marketing prowess that like we haven't seen in a long time. So a lot of unknowns are in here that we're going to sell probably in the next 60 days.
Are you of the opinion that wheat is the leader in the market on the planet at this point for commodities, agricultural commodities, that is? And if that's the case, on the monthly charts, and I don't know whether you use the hard red or the soft red, but I'm assuming Chicago. Yeah, so we're only, 25 cents lower this month than last month.
Right.
Is that right. A good or a bad sign?
Well, you know, wheat can have a tendency to lead corn to some degree, and I kind of watch it. You know, wheat is a market that, you know, you'll hear it say we're awash in wheat globally, and suddenly wheat will go up a buck and a half, and it appears that it's absolutely no fundamental reason whatsoever, and suddenly we find out what that fundamental reason is. And I think we may have perhaps enough things going on globally where we produce, you know, we produce wheat in just about every country, but we harvest it about 9 to 10 months a year someplace. And I think if there's a leader in this, it might be wheat going both ways. Wheat is already down, and it's been wheat for quite a while, long before corn and soybeans were. But I kind of watch that because I watch it purely from a technical standpoint when it gets down to these lows, because if we would have a monthly reversal, I'd love to see wheat close above August highs. In fact, we really need everything to close above August highs somewhere in the down line in the future. And that doesn't seem to be going to happen anytime soon. But wheat would be the one that I'd say, you know, what's going on out here with the dog of the bunch, the weak sister of all the grains that everybody beats up on? What's happening now to make wheat go where we think it shouldn't go? And so I watched that, and we've seen it, you know, happen where suddenly you've got a big explosion in wheat. My concern is what we've been doing the last couple of years is farmers have been reacting to the market to some degree better than I think most thought they would, and they're producing the crop that of least cost input. I still farm or still have interest in North Dakota. My daughter's in Minot. They farm about 10,000 acres up there. There was no wheat up there this year in that northwestern part of the region, or canola, because canola is expensive to raise, and very little corn. And they went to soybeans and some other items that could still show a profit, perhaps. On one farm, we had everything, I think it was about 1,000 acres, went to prevent plants. The opportunity was there, and they could make $75, $80 an acre. So they went to prevent plant. That's after rent. So they went ahead and prevent planted, whereas if had they planted, there would not have been a profit. So we're starting to look at things that lowering our costs one way or the other, and in some of those areas that have ability to plant other things. And I think maybe even the fringe corn states might be one of these. If we keep corn prices low, we may see corn not planted because you can plant something else and lose less. Our numbers this year still show that we're about 1 million acres. We're about 1 million acres less than what the government has come out with on corn, but doesn't seem to matter if the Western Corn Belt gets a bumper crop. So I think we'll lean that way, and wheat would be the one that says, you know, it's not cheap to raise wheat. But I'm wondering about these other countries in Europe that plant corn now. Maybe they can plant wheat pretty cheap, the Ukraine and Russia and so forth. So if we would get wheat to go higher, then I would suggest there's something going on besides planting intentions, of something going on with weather. And I would watch that for a signal. But I think from these levels, fundamentals, you know, are one thing technically. I'll start looking at technicals for some reason to ask myself, when I view things should go lower, why are they going higher? Why are we taking out last week's highs going into harvest and that type of thing? And suggesting maybe like 2010, where it took a complete harvest in corn to find out what we really had. And that's what I'm hoping for here, looking into maybe 2016 for opportunities.
Let me ask one final question. Is it possible that the current downtrend is less about supply and consumption, or production and consumption, and more about the devaluation of currencies and maybe deflation?
Yeah, I don't think, I think I'd have to be proven that there's deflation coming. You know, I've heard that for so many years, we haven't had it. I think the governments around the world have told us, we're not going to let that happen. We're going to keep printing money until it works. And I think that's the focus I've had in the back of my mind. You know, 6 years ago, when Obama became president and his financial representatives were on CNBC, I believe, and they said, well, how long are you going to continue the practices that Bush started, you know, quantitative easing and all these kind of things, and flooding the market with money? And he said, we're going to continue to do it until it works. And so far, it's done pretty well. U.S. is the best economy, and that concerns me, because if you want to ride out bad times, you want your money in the United States, not in Ukraine or Lower Slavovia or Portugal or somewhere, and certainly not Greece. So that gives us the benefit of that. But we've seen equities here going down, along equities and currencies going down together, which suggests another psychological situation with traders around the globe that may or may not have anything to do with our supply and demand situation in the long run. But in the short run, it certainly does the trick. But right now, I think it's an uncertain market, and they're throwing the baby out with the bathwater, and that goes along with all currencies. There's a presumption that we're in a currency war to see which one can devalue the most. But I think in a currency war, we lose short-term, but in the long-term, we probably win. Some of these countries go broke, and now do you want to buy? Do you want to be assured that you're going to get corn and beans out of Argentina in the situation that's highly volatile? Probably not. So I don't think we lose a lot of demand, but we just produce just enough that gives us a little bit too much globally. And globally, we are using more. This year, we'll have a global reduction perhaps along the way, but not near. If you look at a long term, you know, the last 20 or 30 years, we have some setbacks due to diseases and so forth, the protein and that type of thing. But in the long haul, we're going to continue to eat. And I think that's the one thing that a lot of the countries don't want to see as a food shortage on the shelves. I think China says one thing, and then when it gets cheap, they buy. So I don't trust them very far. But I think the one thing we're missing about the whole situation with China being, my goodness, 7%, you know, growth at GDP and so forth. When you look at what China was growing at 10, 11, maybe 12%, but in that 10, 11% range, they had a smaller economy. And I think the bottom line in all this is, in the same way in the United States, we worry, why can't we get 4% growth rate? You know, we don't need 4%. We need good, steady 2.5, 3, 3.5 once in a while. A 3% growth rate on the largest economy in the world is still adds money to disposable income. A 6 or a 5% increase in GDP in China is about as good as it was 10 years ago with a 10% increase. So we have a tendency to belittle the whole situation globally. And I think I don't see it that way. I see the economies growing, but not as fast as CNBC would like to see it, perhaps. And that gives a lot of people who haven't been around all that long maybe a sense of they've got a lock on intelligence. And I think maybe there's an education to be had. Maybe it's for me, you know, but I doubt it. I just think we have good demand out there. The economy is growing well. We just in a bad situation for now. And that's going to hurt going into fall, I think, and especially if the government doesn't agree with pro-farmer and we're somewhere around 166 bushel yield. Then I think we have, regardless of the acres, we have enough supply. And again, when you look at the demand side of things, I hope they don't change that and fall into that trap that we're going to lose exports and feed demand and all that. But we have a supply out there that, regardless of how good the demand is, we're still going to have some left over. So that allows for some kind of a demand or, I mean, supply shock out of South America next year and maybe out of the U.S. Next summer if we get a perfect crop in South America again. So you got a cushion out there that, as an end user, there's really no incentive to buy anything yet. The only thing that I look forward to is it is September, and we have a periodic cycle out here since last January, really, of a ridge west, trough east type thing. And I think another cool front that comes out of Canada, scheduled for maybe the latter half of September, might put an end to the growing season up north. Whether it makes any difference or not, depending early here, I don't know. But that would be the only one thing left that we need to really keep an eye on, is that once the September crop report's through, take a look at weather, and will that affect our crop maturity or not. We'll know more as we see the progress reports.
Thank you so much for taking the time with us. We're looking forward to having you at the Farm Progress Show tomorrow.
Yep, looking forward to being there. Thanks.
Jerry Gulke, of course, is with the Gulke Group out of Chicago, Illinois. He's just one of the many analysts that will join us at the Farm Progress Show site just outside of Decatur this week on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. Again, I'm on the Farm Progress Show site right now. This program was pre-recorded, and I'm setting up for the live shows that we'll do Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. Hopeful that you will visit us in the University of Illinois tent. The tent is located on West Avenue at 3rd Street. When you come in the main gate, we're just about a block and a half to your right. It'll be very quick, simple, and easy for you to find us on Tuesday. We'll have in the tent Wayne Nelson, Steve Freed, Bryce Knorr, Jerry Gulke, Bill Gentry, and Dale Durkles. Now, Orion Samuelson will be there in the morning, the famed WGN farm broadcaster, the dean of the farm broadcasters. He'll take the stage at 10 a.m., and he'll be up with many of those analysts, a whole bunch of the folks that come to the tent from the University of Illinois, and lots of folks from outside of the tent. If you want to stay up on agriculture, see Orion, hear from some of the analysts and some messages from the U of I, drop by at 10 in the morning, and then 2 o'clock in the afternoon, I'll be up on stage with that same crew. We'll take the stage and do the program for the Closing Market Report live from the Farm Progress Show each and every day, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday from the U of I tent. Our guest on Wednesday will include Jackie Vanks, Brian Stark, Alan Brugler, Bill Mayer, Ellen Dearden, Chip Nellinger, among many others. And then on Thursday, we'll not only do the Closing Market Report, but also we'll do the Commodity Week program. Mike Zuzulo, Jerry Goodell, Greg Johnson, Merrill Crowley, Matt Bennett, and Jim Angel will be there. That again at the Farm Progress Show site in Decatur, Illinois. Looking forward to having you there. Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday of this week, we'll be broadcasting live. My thanks to the folks back at the home radio station, Illinois Public Media, WILL AM 580, for all of their assistance as we've been on the road a whole lot for the month of August and the beginning here of September. Without them, it would not certainly be possible. Jerry Moorfield and Jason Croft in particular have done a fantastic job. I won't remember to thank them live during the show, but I want to make sure to tell those folks that it makes a whole lot of difference to me and to you, I hope, that we're able to travel, get out, do programming live from remote sites like the Illinois State Fair, the Farm Progress Show, and hopefully many others in the future.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at agrigold.com.
It's National Trail Mix Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1742, a plague of grasshoppers destroyed crops in Pennsylvania. In 1836, African-American inventor Henry Blair was issued a patent for a cottonseed planter. By the way, his patents were signed with a simple X because he had not learned to read or write. In 1900, Sir John Bennett Laws died, an English agronomist. He founded the artificial fertilizer industry. Together with Sir Joseph Gilbert, they conducted agricultural experiments at Rothamsted Experimental Station, the oldest agricultural research station in the world. They are considered the founding fathers of agricultural sciences. In 1900, Coca-Cola went on sale for the first time in Britain. In 1921, the first successful demonstration of an aerial crop dusting was performed in Ohio by Lieutenant John A. McCready. He was flying a Curtiss JN6H, most fondly known as the Flying Jenny. In 1960, the National Agricultural Center and Hall of Fame was established. And in 1995, the summer was so hot in Missouri that at the end of August, methane gas emitted within large bales of freshly cut hay began to spontaneously combust. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible in part by a grant from Risk Management Commodities, with offices in Chalmers and Lafayette, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities provides commodities analysis and recommendations for business and agriculture. For information, call 866-837-9027.
I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on a Monday afternoon. It is the 31st of August. John Davis with Earth Risk Technologies serves as their senior weather analyst, is on the line. Thanks, John, for being with us. Tell me about the weather forecast for the Farm Progress Show in Central Illinois, Decatur, this week, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday.
Well, it is going to feel like early August. It is very warm and on the dry side, so kind of a midsummer week here coming up as we start out the first week of September with high temperatures in the lower to mid-90s and dry conditions here from now right through the Labor Day weekend.
Folks would like one more rainfall, probably, for the rains this Labor Day time frame, from Labor Day to about the next 10 days or so, is a good time to put rain on soybeans across the whole of the Corn Belt to finish them out and make a really good crop. Will that come?
Well, for most of the central and southern sections of the Midwest, it does not look like that's going to come, as a rather dry pattern is in place right now, basically near and south of kind of I-80. So some of the areas north of there, for example, over the weekend in parts of Wisconsin and northern Iowa, they got big rains here on Friday and Saturday. So some of those areas have gotten their finishing rains here. But certainly for the southern and central portions of the Midwest, it does look like a drier mode. And over the next 10 days, it looks like prospects are very low for any kind of real significant widespread rains that would aid in any kind of late developing beans.
During hurricane season, we usually get a tropical storm or a hurricane that drops some rainfall on the Midwest. I take it that's not going to happen.
Right. Well, after Fred moved across Hispaniola and the mountains of Hispaniola totally eradicated the storm, we do have the remnants of that, which is a blob of thunderstorms across Florida, and that will be affecting parts of the southeast, Georgia and South Carolina, parts of North Carolina. But that's the extent of the impact of overall systems here of Erica and the remnants of that, and Fred, which will never have any impact on the U.S. as it stays an Atlantic storm.
And then finally, are there other places around the planet that we ought to be checking in on that you do have concerns about?
We do. Certainly Ukraine and portions of Russia have been very dry here lately, and some of the dryness here over the past, you know, 5 or 6 weeks have been some of the driest conditions they've had of any year over the last, you know, 15 or 18 years. So really extreme dryness across those areas, and there's no question that has impacted the development of the summer crops. And now we have to start watching that area for winter crops, which are going to start being planted later on in September.
Do you suppose it's dry enough to have some real concerns about wheat sowings in Ukraine and parts of Russia?
There's no question. It's too early to be overly concerned about it. But during the month of September, that's going to be something that's going to be a very key area to monitor, and it's going to put great emphasis on getting rainfall either in September or the first couple of weeks of October as the winter wheat is put in the ground.
John, thanks so much for taking the time with us today.
Oh, my pleasure, Todd.
John Davis, of course, is with Earth Risk Technologies in Chicago. That wraps up this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason.